From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, you can call us now at 800-462-7413. And, of course, along with your call, some topics to talk over, Zorba.
Right. Pesticides, are they really a risk factor for ALS? We'll talk about some interesting information that came out. Mm-hmm. And the FDA finally came out with new labels that you can read and that mean something and that are easy to see and easy to interpret no matter what your age and educational experience. Hooray, FDA. Hooray, hooray, hooray.
But will any of us pay any attention to
them? I think people will pay attention. You'd be surprised. Give them a label and they will come.
What's our recipe?
Salmon and black bean tostadas. Do you like tostadas? I love tostadas. Do you like salmon? Do you like black beans?
Yeah,
it is a great recipe.
Yeah. 800-462-7413, that number. And Zorba, a Madison, Wisconsin listener, is with us now. Hi.
Hi, Zorba. Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
Well, we've been working on an acne problem with our 17-year-old son for the past few years, and just like to run a few things by you, if I could.
Sure. What's going on?
We have kind of a reoccurring, every few months it seems to flare up worse than others, and especially going into the football season where it's the chin strap is on there and the heavy sweating, it really flares up then. Mm-hmm. And, we've run through a few of the creams and a dapoline gel, and he takes a minocycline, I believe it is.
Minocycline, which is an antibiotic.
Mm-hmm. Right. So other than those two things and a couple of the other, over-the-counter things that we've tried, it really doesn't seem to help. I mean, it always seems to flare up.
So he's 17. He's had this problem for a while, obviously, on and off. And you've used over-the-counter medications, benzoyl peroxide being sort of the mainstay over-the-counter medication that you use. And you're obviously getting these from your physician. You're getting the drug. What is the adapalene you said you're also getting?
Adapalene gel.
Adapalene gel, which is good. And then he's also on doxycycline, which is an oral antibiotic. Once a day or twice a day?
Well, it's twice a day, but on the jar. But who knows if that actually happens? So.
Aha! Aha!
I'll give you that.
As the father of four perfect children, I can absolutely relate to the issues at all. Okay, so he's taking a pill intermittently at best. Maybe every day, maybe twice a day, maybe not every day. So, given that, he may be putting on the creams the way they're prescribed and not.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So
that's probably accurate.
So I would highly accurate to know that it's inaccurate when you know actually what's going on. We've all been teenagers at one point, but sometimes the memory sort of fades when it comes to thinking back to things like that.
Sure.
I'll tell you what I would recommend initially. First of all, you don't know what he's doing and how he's doing it. And that's really a big issue. And that's part of often what the issue is, actually doing the stuff correctly. So I highly recommend that you use what you have and you really make sure that he does it and you make sure that you figure out how to do it. So he ought to be on the doxycycline if he tolerates it twice a day. The creams that he's using, the adapalene cream and a benzoyl peroxide wash, which are usually the things that are used in combination, and then often a topical antibiotic such as clindamycin, either in a gel form or in the cream form, can be very, very useful. You get that from your physician. So that also works well. So the issue with your son is one of compliance. If he's 50% compliant or 75% compliant or 95% compliant, you don't really know. So you want to develop a system for him. So what you want to do for your son is make up a calendar. And you want him to make a little check mark every time he does it, and you want to figure out how to encourage it. You might decide to give him the pill yourself, for instance, because often pills are the things that kids don't do. They'll often spend some time in the mirror at night looking at their skin and putting on the cream, but for some reason the pill is the least compliant thing at all. And that's what I would do. I would start the compliance before football season so that you really have it under control, and then during football season I would do that also.
Okay.
So what does he play on the team?
He is a linebacker.
He's a linebacker. So he's a big guy.
So he gets hit around a little bit. Yeah, he's a bigger guy.
He gets hit around a little bit. So, well, good luck. Hope there are no injuries this year.
All right, guys. Thank you very much.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Appreciate the call. Thank you very much.
I'm thinking of a linebacker. I'm the opposite of a linebacker, you know. If I were a linebacker, it would be one and done when it came to being on a football team.
Me too. 800-462-7413 is our number. 800-462-7413. Zorba, you're going to talk some now about pesticide exposure and the risk of ALS.
Yeah, this is kind of an interesting article. But before we talk about it, let's talk about pesticides. You know, so we use pesticides all the time to kind of keep our lives down, keep those pests away, because we really can't take those pests. So I have a very good friend. He's a physician. In India, he's actually the personal physician to the Dalai Lama. He's the main physician. Mm-hmm. And he comes over. I see him, you know, generally once a year because I'm involved. I'm one of the physicians for the Dalai Lama when he's in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And so we're sitting around one day, and I'm sort of slapping mosquitoes and flies. I'm in my backyard. It's Wisconsin. It's July. It's hot. The bugs are bothering me. And he looked at me, and he said, "You Americans are so bothered by insects. They just bother you all the time. You know, if there's a fly buzzing around, you want to get rid of it or anything else." He said, "Why are you so bothered by insects?" I said, "Well, they bother me all the time." He said, "You know, in India, they're just around. They're like the flowers. They're like the grass. You know, unless they actually come close to you, we don't swat the bees and the wasps and the insects." He said, "Just kind of learn to live with them." It's very interesting because it's a different way of looking at bugs. Now, I have a neighbor, and he likes his lawn to be crystal clear, emerald green.
So he puts a lot of stuff.
Well, he used to use a company called ChemLawn. And one day, ChemLawn took off the chem, ChemLawn, they took it off their truck, and they put True Green instead of ChemLawn. So here it was.
They're putting the same stuff
on the lawn, but now it's True Green. But in fact, it's not True Green. It's fluorescent green, and it looks like pickle relish. There's nothing true about it at all. And the real question is, do these pesticides do anything?
Yeah.
And the answer is, do they do something bad? So in JAMA Neurology, they looked at 156 patients, and they looked at controls. These are people who had ALS. They all had questionnaires about their age, ethnicity, education, and so on. And they looked at their residence, they looked at their occupation, and looked at long-term exposure to pesticides. Then they looked at blood levels to determine whether or not they had any environmental pollutants in their blood, looking specifically into pesticides. Were they ever exposed? And these are people who have done research over the years. And they've looked at it over the last 10 years and their exposure and so on. And they found that exposure to pesticides at any time in their life was associated with a five-fold increase in the risk of ALS.
Fivefold.
Now, the risk of ALS is very, very tiny. In other words, the risk that we'll get it, I can't give you chapter and verse as to what the number is, but it's ALS is not a common disease, but it's not a rare disease. So a five-fold increase in an uncommon disease is still a small number. Nonetheless, if it's increasing your risk, possibly, and once again, we don't know causality. It's not a double-blind study. The question then is, why take that risk?
Yeah.
And why let your children on a lawn with pesticides when it may increase their lifetime risk? Why not simply change your view of your lawn? Get rid of the fluorescent green lawn and make it a natural green lawn that doesn't have all that pesticide on it.
We're talking now about ALS. Doesn't pesticide harm us in other ways?
Well, of course. You know, and the issue with pesticides is, does it increase our risk of cancer? And does it increase, you know, other risks that are involved? Because when you look at a pesticide, you're basically looking at a chemical that is destroying the neurological structure of the insect. In other words, it is a poison to the insect. And it's not a poison to the grass. The grass is a plant. The insect is an animal. We are closer to the insects than we are to the weeds. I mean, because insects are animals, yeah. And we share part of the same genome. And what the FDA says is safe when used properly is, how safe is it? You know, if we look at 2,4-D and other pesticides that have been around, we've discovered, or DDT, for example, that they're really not safe. So I think, you know, certainly in some areas of the country, we've stopped overusing pesticides. And in other areas of the country, people are proud of their lawn because it doesn't have a weed. And the reality is, you should look at that lawn and say, this lawn is inorganic. It's the opposite of natural. Yeah. It's artificial. So change your view. And, you know, that's what we should do to protect ourselves from ALS, and especially children who walk on the lawn. And if you're going to go sit on a fluorescent green lawn, go inside and take a shower before you touch yourself.
Let's see if we can help another caller now, Zorba. A listener with us in Chicago, Illinois. Hi. Fine. How can we help?
Well, my question is about the long-term effects of Lyme disease. When I was younger, well, I'm 50 now, when I was maybe 14, 15, I get bit by a tick. I didn't know that I had it until I got Bell's palsy in half my body. And then, you know, I went to the emergency room. They put me on steroids. And Bell's palsy went away, and I never did anything else about it. But I was just wondering, you know, I get tired a lot. I was just wondering, like I said, about the long-term effects.
Sure. So you had Bell's palsy, and you had a positive Lyme test also? Is that what they found, or what?
Yes, correct.
Uh-huh. But they don't know when it occurred. I mean, you can get a tick bite and, you know, wipe it off and never know. So, but you had a Lyme test that showed you had Lyme disease. You're Lyme positive.
Yes.
Okay. When did you have the Bell's palsy?
That was when I was about 14 or 15.
Okay.
And then when I went in, that's when I found out they did the tests on me for the Bell's palsy, and that's when I found out I had Lyme disease.
Uh-huh. Okay, so when they did. And Bell's palsy is when one part of your face doesn't move properly. I mean, it's a palsy, so it doesn't move. And then you fully recovered from that? They gave you steroids and it fully recovered?
Yes.
Okay, so what kind of symptoms do you have?
I don't know. I just lack of energy and just tired a lot.
Well, there's so many things that can cause a lack of energy. Are you on any medicines at all?
No, and, you know, that's another thing I wanted to ask you, too. After that, when I was young, mm-hmm. you know, back then, the ADD and all that was new, and I had a lot of energy when I was younger. So the psychiatrist tried to put me on Ritalin. Well, uh-huh. I took one pill, and I had a terrible seizure. Mm-hmm. I took that one Ritalin pill, but since then, I haven't taken much medicine. And now that I'm getting older, you know, I mean, I'm sure I'm going to have to get on some kind of medication for something because I have aches and pains and all kinds of issues. But uh-huh. I was wondering, is there anything else that you know of, like, that I should look out for?
Sure. If you have a lack of energy, one of the things I always tell people is get your thyroid tested. A TSH test will check your thyroid, see what's going on with your thyroid. If you're worried about an infection that may be there that you haven't yet discovered, there's a blood test called an ESR, which is a sedimentation rate, and it often is sort of just like taking your temperature. It'll tell whether or not something's abnormal. If your ESR is normal, often it means there you don't have a smoldering infection. It's sort of a gross test, but sometimes I'll do that for people who are concerned about things. If you're concerned that it's recurrent Lyme, you get another Lyme test, and you can tell. You can get Lyme more than once, and you can get another Lyme test for that. And sometimes just a general physical to see if something else is going on. Fatigue can be caused by depression. It's a common reason, sort of a common symptom of depression can be fatigue and anxiety. Sometimes checking a blood test to see whether or not you're anemic, whether or not you've got other things going on. So sometimes just a general physical to look at it. I wouldn't chalk it up to something. I wouldn't say you necessarily will need medicines later on. I'll give you a good example. Other day in the office, I had an 82-year-old woman. Blood pressure is perfect. She's not on any medications. She came into the office just to get a checkup. I looked at her and I said, if every patient were like you, I would have nothing to do during the day and I would suffer from bankruptcy because there's nothing going on.
I've got to ask the caller, how old are you?
About 50.
see, you are a youngster. You are not an oldster.
I'm feeling the pain. You know, I did furniture for 10 years. You know, I drove a truck.
Oh, no. Yeah.
You know, so I'm just, now I'm starting to feel, you know.
But I'm going
to
tell you something. Your muscular aches and pains, I've got a recommendation for you. Go to the drugstore, get generic Aleve, double the dose in the bottle, take two Aleve tablets in the morning, two Aleve tablets in the evening, and do that for 4 to 6 weeks and see what that does to your aches and pains. And what are you doing for exercise?
Not much.
That's it. You got it. I'll tell you something. I have a good recommendation for you. Go to the store, and you can get it on Amazon.com. It's something called the Misfit. I love it. It's sort of a pedometer. They're now $20 for the Misfit Flash. I love it. Connects to your smartphone. Do you have a smartphone or a dumb phone?
Smartphone.
You've got a smartphone. You pull down the app. It connects to your smartphone. It'll tell you how much you're moving. Try to hit 10,000 steps a day. You might not get there, but you might get to 6,000 to 8,000. It's the best thing you can do for aches and pains. And for you, sitting in your cab all the time, like you said, doing nothing, what happens is it's not good for your joints. When you're 50 years of age, you begin to feel it because your joints aren't moving enough. So you've got to begin to sort of get a handle on doing some exercise, and that means taking 20 minutes. It's walking. And the thing I like about the Misfit, it's like the Fitbit, but it's a quarter or a fifth of the price. Fitbit started about $100. This is $20. Is it gives you some insight into how much you're doing. And for me, it gives me insight on a day that I'm in my office for how much I'm not doing. And that motivates me. I look at it and go, I haven't done anything. I come home, even in the wintertime when it's bad, and either I go down to my basement, hit my elliptical, or I get outside if the weather isn't bad, and I walk for 20 minutes and I feel better. You got to get some exercise under your belt.
You know what? I'll tell you, I'm going to go get that Misfit. And the thing is, you know, I came up from down south about a year and a half ago. And when I got here, man, I'm a thin guy. I weighed 150 pounds. I weighed myself the other day, just being here for the last 13 months, I weighed 209.
Oh, that's way too much. You're just sitting in the cabin eating. Get yourself a Misfit and start reading those labels and start to get yourself on a program. That's what you need to do. You've got some good things. It's not the Lyme disease. It's all the other stuff. So
thank you.
Yep. Take care.
Appreciate the call. Thank you very much. And before we take a break, Zorba, it's time now for another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc.
The following email came to us from a loyal listener named Sigmund. He writes, Dear Zorba, I enjoy listening to your program. It is always interesting and informative. I was a pack-and-a-half smoker for 35 years. A couple years ago, a friend informed me he quit smoking by using e-cigarettes. After 6 months of smoking and using e-cigarettes, I went to using just e-cigarettes and have not had tobacco in over 2 years. I informed some other individuals, and one has quit smoking, the other is using both, but has cut down the tobacco smoking by half. If this has happened to me and my friends, is there something wrong with the data you mentioned that e-cigarettes do not help people quit smoking? Can you please clarify?
Well, first of all, they help some people quit smoking. But when we look statistically at the whole group, there are two things that are going on. Some people take e-cigarettes and they quit smoking. And the question has been all along, is this useful? On the other hand, you have other people who are taking e-cigarettes and that becomes their compulsion. They use e-cigarettes all the time. So then the question is, which is more dangerous, cigarettes or e-cigarettes? Well, e-cigarettes are not regulated yet by the FDA. We don't know what you're inhaling, except we know they are lacing it with nicotine. Which obviously is bad for you because it's addictive. Anything that's addictive can't be good for you. I'm never going to say, hey, it's addictive. Way to go. You don't want to do anything that's addictive. You don't know what's in there. We know that some of the chemicals in there are heavy metals that are bad for us. They're poison. So here it is. Are you substituting one poison for another? That's the question. And whenever I talk about e-cigarettes, I always get a lot of email. They go, hey, this helped me quit. I think this is great. Well, the answer is, if you quit, it is okay. Absolutely no doubt about it. Pack-a-day smoker, take e-cigarettes for a month or two, you quit, you're off the e-cigarettes, perfectly fine. The problem is a lot of people then stay on the e-cigarettes, and they are pollution by definition. Anything other than pure air is pollution. The other issue with e-cigarettes is they are a portal to addiction for young people. End of topic. Absolutely. They are exploding in young people. Young people in middle school and in high school are using e-cigarettes all the time. They are the portal of entry to cigarettes, or they just become another addiction. So I am against e-cigarettes, except in certain circumstances. So no, I stand by the data. The data is true and there, and that's life.
Mm-hmm. Do you disagree with something Zorba said? Come on, cough it up. Just post it on our Facebook page or send us an email
to zorba@wpr.org. Or really, post it on Facebook because, come on, Facebook is where it's at.
We have a recipe coming up. You want to stick around for that. More of your calls, of course. Quacking up with Dr. Zorba later on in the hour here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 is our number if you have a question for Zorba. But before our next call, Zorba, salmon and black bean tostadas.
Right. Do you like salmon?
Yeah, sure.
Do you like Mexican food?
Yeah, I love Mexican
food. So black beans are kind of part of Mexican food. Now, do you like tostadas?
Well, I'm an enchilada.
So you're an enchilada person. So you like the texture of enchiladas more than tostadas.
Yeah, yeah.
But for some people like kind of the crunch of tostadas
versus the
stuff. Now, let's see. Do I like enchiladas or tostadas? I kind of like them both. They're just kind of different things. But anyway, the real issue is trying to make Mexican food healthier because on the whole, Mexican food sometimes can be unhealthy. And I think that's, well, I don't want to say unhealthy, but caloric dense. You are smiling.
I don't think I want healthy Mexican food.
Actually, you see, that's it. You're looking like healthy and Mexican cannot be one and the same. You want to enjoy it. You want to enjoy it. Well, you will like this. You will like it.
Okay. All right. Let's
So start out with 8 6-inch tortillas.
8 6-inch tortillas.
These can be corn tortillas or wheat tortillas, depending on what you would like to have.
Yeah.
You're going to use, by the way, some canola cooking oil spray. Then you need a 6-ounce can of boneless, skinless, wild Alaska salmon that's been drained. Mm-hmm. So in other words, you're going to be using Alaska salmon. The red is better than the pink.
Okay, and that's a 6-ounce can of it. Yeah.
Right, so you can use canned salmon. Now, my wife loves fresh salmon. My wife loves fresh sushi. My wife does not like canned salmon. Mm. And I happen to like canned salmon, and my kids do also. And so to make the canned salmon better, what I would do is when I open up the salmon, I take out the bones. You know, the bones are cooked in there, and some people don't like the bones in there. So it takes a little bit of prep.
Mm-hmm.
An avocado diced. 2 tablespoonfuls of minced pickled jalapenos, or any jalapenos you want to have, but the pickled jalapenos are better with some of the jalapeno juice from the jar.
Mm-hmm.
A cup of coleslaw mix. Shred some cabbage, but get the mix from the store. It's easier.
A cup of coleslaw mix or shredded cabbage.
2 tablespoonfuls of chopped cilantro or parsley if you are one of the non-cilantro lover people.
Mm. 2 big tea chopped cilantro.
You know, for some people, cilantro tastes like soap. Now, do you know what soap tastes like? I do because my mother put it in my
mouth
twice.
Oh,
I can remember 2 times,
really?
Maybe more. Ivory soap. As I talk about it, I can taste it, and I remember.
Have been really naughty.
Whatever I said, I was at my Aunt Lee's house. My mother was a very gentle woman. I said something to her. She took me by the hand over to the sink to the bathroom. It was a small bathroom on the first floor and shoved some ivory soap into my mouth.
I still remember
it today. She didn't hold it in there. She shoved it in, and she probably said, "Don't you ever say that again." And I have no memory of what I said, but I can sure remember the taste of soap. And for anyone whose mother shoved soap into their mouth, they can remember it. Nonetheless.
You probably never said it again.
I never did. It went out of my memory. But I don't remember what I can't say anymore. Yeah, but she's gone. So anyway, back to the recipe.
Yeah.
2 tablespoonfuls of cilantro or parsley. 15-ounce can of black beans. Rinse them.
A 15-ounce can of black beans, rinsed.
3 tablespoonfuls of reduced-fat sour cream.
3 Big T reduced-fat sour cream.
Couple of tablespoonfuls of salsa.
Couple Big T salsa.
2 scallions chopped.
And 2 scallions chopped.
Preheat the oven at 375. Coat the tortillas on both sides with some cooking spray. That's going to save you some calories. Place on 2 baking sheets. Bake, turning twice or once, whatever you want to do, for about 12 to 15 minutes until they crisp up. Therefore, mm-hmm. you have crisped them up without the oil. Mm-hmm. You don't need the oil. The spray is good enough. And that's part of the trick of reducing the calorie in the recipe. Combine the salmon. Once again, take out those bones if you don't like them. I don't care about them. My wife does. The jalapeno, jalapenos, the avocado in a bowl. Then combine the cabbage, cilantro, or parsley and pickling juice in another bowl. Process now the black beans, sour cream, salsa, and scallions in a food processor until smooth. So put them in a little food processor. I've got a little one at home that I mm-hmm. use for this, so my cleanup is much quicker. Transfer to a microsafe bowl. Cover and microwave on high heat for about 2 minutes. And you can also do it by just putting the pot on the stove, but you want to warm that up. Now you want to assemble it. So take each tortilla, put a little bit of the black bean mixture on there, a little bit of the salmon mixture on top, top with the cabbage mixture, serve with lime wedges. Voila! Yeah. You've got a homemade tortilla. You could do it with a soft one if you didn't want to crisp it up, so you mm-hmm. could make something that would be like an enchilada. You could also do it with a pre-made taco shell, but you would not be saving those calories because the pre-made taco shells are filled with fat.
You could put this together and then make sure you have a six-pack of beer.
That's right. Mexican you got to put the limes in the beer in the six-pack. It's wonderful. About 400 calories per serving, and some of that comes from fat. But the majority of those calories do not come from fat. It's an excellent thing. And if you want to get it, guess where you go? ZorbaPastor.org. You can see pictures of Tom, pictures of me. Look at also wonderful things on our website, ZorbaPastor.org. Don't forget, find us on Facebook, and I do the occasional tweet.
800-462-7413, toll free, 800-462-7413. Wausau, Wisconsin listeners with us now, Zorba. Hi.
Hello, how are you?
Fine, how can we help?
Okay, my question was about sleep, and I know your recipe, Pinko. And one thing with our youngest child is we found out MSG causes absence seizures, not on one child, but on two.
Mm-hmm.
And with your recipe, you included panko.
Mm-hmm. Panko. Mm-hmm.
Right. And we had to dissect every food out there as far as containing MSG. And most of the processed foods, the boxed foods, contain MSG.
Oh, they do. You're right. Boxed foods do. MSG, by the way, is also, they add MSG. MSG is normal in certain foods. In other words, it actually is a natural, it's produced naturally. Off the top of my head, I can't tell you which foods develop MSG naturally, but it's something that's added a lot to processed foods. And there's MSG syndrome, which a number of people have. I've never heard of it actually causing seizures, but it often causes people to be tired. They get nauseous. They don't feel good. And it can be a problem, and staying away from processed foods, can make a difference. And you've got you have a couple of children who have had problems with MSG?
Oh, yeah, and we just recently found that out. It was 5 years.
Oh, sure.
5 years. Mm-hmm. And they would have, they could have ended up a lifetime on seizure meds.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I would disagree with that. I don't think there's any evidence that MSG causes seizures. I don't agree with that. I think MSG causes side effects. I agree with that. There's good data. But there's no evidence it causes seizures. None at all. And there's a lot of junk on the web about MSG. So we know it's Chinese restaurant syndrome. We know it's real. We know some people have it. But we all know there's a lot of junk out there. So I don't believe everything you read on the web.
Say a concerned mother does more research than all of the CIA combined.
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of junk out there that's not scientifically based, but A lot of processed food has MSG because when you process food with MSG, people buy it. I mean, so that's why they take it and put it in. And there are a lot of people that don't tolerate it. And I say, well, then you make your own food. You know, that's useful. And staying away from processed food is actually always good because on the whole, processed foods, if you read the labels and it has more than five ingredients in it, it's artificial and can be bad for you. So you have to be careful.
And I have one more question, if that's okay. Really, really bad allergies. One of my kids had. Really, we've never had allergies in our family, and this kid is miserable. And anything to help, other than you know the drowsy formula.
Absolutely, I'll give you my recipe for allergies. Number one, over-the-counter Flonase. It's now available without a prescription. It's a steroid nasal spray. It's my go-to drug for allergies. Takes a day or two to kick in, two squirts in each nostril in the morning, two squirts in each nostril in the evening. It is dynamite. And if you tilt your head back, a little bit of it gets up the eustachian tube and gets to the bottom of the lacrimal duct, which then goes around the eye and will get rid of the itching. Great drug. Number two, one of the non-sedating antihistamines, which are Claritin, Allegra, and Zyrtec. Zyrtec is a little sedating to some people, but it's stronger. Works really, really well. That's what I recommend for everyone. And if you're really miserable, when you go to sleep at bedtime, over-the-counter generic Benadryl 25 to 50 milligrams at bedtime. These are dynamite things that work for allergies. Stay away from the shots because they don't work unless you are absolutely miserable, in which case it takes a long time for them to work and they don't do a great job. But over-the-counter stuff now, dynamite for allergies, that's what I would recommend for your children.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
A pleasure. Thanks for your call.
Appreciate the call at 800-462-7413. Before the break, Zorba, time for another dive into the murky waters of medical quackery. It's time again for Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba. Okay, Zorba, for today's Quacking Up segment, tell us about Father Sebastian Niep and his curious water cure.
That's right, his water cure. So in order to find out about the Father's water cure, we have to look at really where it came from. It came from a guy called James Caleb Jackson, who was in upstate New York, and he was a wonderful guy. He was a self-promoter, and whenever he came up with a good idea, he had a flag that he would put in front of his office, a J flag, to announce that he had come up with a new health segment. So he was a self-promoter. Before you had tweet and Facebook, you would just put up a flag and say you would have something important. And he had actually studied the early Greeks and Roman and Chinese practices and discovered that water was extremely important for curing. So, lo and behold, we now have the information that came out throughout the world, and through hook or by crook, it traveled to Bavaria, where Father Sebastian Kniep, I think that's how you pronounce
it. Kniep, I think.
Yeah, well, K-N-E-I-P-P. You figure out, how would you pronounce that? Kniep or Knip?
Kniep.
Kniep. No K. The K is silent.
I think so.
How do you know?
I don't have any idea.
Neither
I'm just guessing.
But anyway, in 1821, he was a frail child. He wasn't very happy. He was dismissed from theology school because of his constant ill health. Prayer and medical study were unavailing for his vocation. Mm-hmm. He wanted to be a healer, and one day he decided to walk in the park without his shoes through an icy stream. And after he walked through the icy stream, he discovered that he felt better. So then he plunged his whole body into the icy cold water of Bavaria and felt even better than that. And so he started dressing up in a frock, even though he wasn't really a father. He was a father by a costume, I guess you would say. Mm-hmm. And he became a healer. And people would come all over for his famous water cure. And his water cure was... Number one, take an insider out. Water dissolves the poisonous elements in our blood. So in other words, you should not only drink ice water, but you should submerge yourself in ice water to get rid of the poisonous elements in our blood. Number two, water withdraws all the unhealthful matter in our blood other than the blood poisons. So it'll get rid of the unhealthful matter. In other words, it will cleanse our blood once again by not only drinking ice water, by submerging yourself in ice water. I don't know how you do this in the South, but in Bavaria in the wintertime, it was easy. And number three, water strengthens and braces our constitution. Now, you may think that this is quackery, but in fact, we now know that 8 glasses of water a day are
water is good for us.
Water is good for us because it flushes our body, according to the Father. But where did the concept of flushing come from? Why do we think that when we drink water, it flushes out of our body? I think he had something right. In other words, so it was quackery in that it has to be ice water because people in the South do not have access to ice water at any time. But maybe he had a little bit of knowledge within his quackery cure.
Maybe those people that jump in the water and
in the middle of the winter,
in the middle of
it really have something going for us. Yeah. But have you ever looked at the people who actually jump in the water in the middle of the wintertime? Have you noticed what they look like?
They look like regular people.
Well, they tend to be overweight. I've looked at the polar plunges, and most of the polar plunge people have an element of kind of fat on their body that tends to insulate them from the coldness within the water. And so maybe that's maybe – and the father was – he was a hefty guy.
Oh, he was.
He was a hefty guy. That's what he was known for. But that's another story. We'll save that for the next quackery segment.
Do you have an example of medical quackery to contribute to this segment? Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have a topic to talk about. That's coming up next, and more of your calls, too, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. But right now, Zorba, the FDA is changing our food labels.
Right, right. And let me compliment the FDA on finally going through the political and capitalistic issues concerning food labels. Either left or right, you want to make sure you have good information for people.
And yeah,
you've got
exactly,
the food.
Right, yeah.
You've got basically, you've got health on one side. You've got the agricultural industry on the other side, the food manufacturers on the other side. And why don't we compromise that allows us as consumers to see things the right way.
Now I'm looking at the old label and the new label, and what jumps out at us is the calories.
Absolutely. There are two things that jump out that I think are great. First of all, once you see nutrition facts, the biggest thing on the label is it says the number of calories. Awesome. That's what you want to have. Why do you look at a label? Calories, calories, calories. You may be looking at how many vitamins are in there, but frankly, calories are the number one reason you
I'm the only
it.
Person. Maybe you're in the same boat I'm in. We look at calories and hope that the number is high. At least I do.
Well, I don't want the number to be high. I want it to be low. Well, why would you want it to be high?
Because because I'm skinny.
Yeah, well, you want to gain weight.
A little weight.
Let me tell you, 95% of the people do not want it to be high. You're
one
of the
5%.
No, I don't want it to be high. I'm not looking for more food dense. I want it to be low. Absolutely, I'm not interested. But you have always had the issue, and that's a very important issue.
That's true.
Of that. But the real thing is, you whatever you want to get out of it, calories are the number one thing. The second thing that jumps out is serving size. You can now see it because it's bold and it's larger. So the serving size is larger. And then above that, it says how many servings per container, and that's smaller. So the first thing you want to go is, for instance, we're looking at one label. It says, as an example, 230. Calories, you can look right away and see, for instance, it's two-thirds of a cup. So I love this new label. Then the next thing is it tells you the total fat, which is what we're considered total cholesterol. But this label also tells added sugars.
Oh, yes.
That's the biggest difference. So it tells you whether or not sugar has been added to the product. So it tells you calories right away, serving size right away, and did they add some sugar to the product.
The sugar people are not happy about that.
Are you kidding? They're incensed. They tried to get it out. They said, you shouldn't add added sugars. You should just say the total amount of sugar. But basically, this is telling you whether or not the company added sugar to it in order to get you to buy it. So I've got a recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
I think everyone should start looking at labels. over and over and over again when the new labels come out, because you want to know what you're eating. You want to know whether the food is caloric dense, has added sugar, so you can eat the right food that is more natural and helps you stay fit.
800-462-7413 is our number. 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, a listener joins in from Crandon, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Well, I have some questions about intermittent fasting. I saw a piece on the morning news several months ago, and it was a lady who wanted to lose weight and still eat donuts.
Mm-hmm.
So she found this fasting program, and it was about a 2 or 3 minute piece, but I went on the internet and did a little study and found out that fasting can be incorporated into your daily life and can be actually very beneficial, according to what I read. So I tried it myself about 2 months ago for 5 weeks, and I fast every day from 5 in the afternoon until the next noon. I don't eat anything. I can have coffee, water, non-caloric beverages, but I don't eat anything. So my feeding window, or the time that I can eat, is basically from noon until 5 that day. I also use a dietary tracker, so I put in everything that I eat. And my goal is to lose fat, not necessarily weight, but specifically fat. I weighed 200 pounds when I started, and after 5 weeks, I was down to 187.
Good work.
I was very happy with that.
Yeah, good work.
And the goal was not necessarily to do anything other than to make my pants fit better.
Uh-huh.
I don't like fat around my middle, which is where mine accumulates.
Yeah. And, you know, I have to tell you, most people don't like fat around the middle. It's not something that people go, hey, I want some fat around the middle, I'll look better. But, you know, other than back in the 1800s, when that was a sign of wealth, you know, the fat cats, they called them the fat cats because they were rich, which meant they were fat. They had enough calories to accumulate fat. But in America, we don't want that. So basically, this is working for you.
It is.
Yeah, it doesn't work for everyone, by the way. A lot of people fast. They don't realize it. They'll stop eating at 10 or 11 o'clock at night, and what they'll do is they'll go to sleep. They won't have any breakfast in the morning, and they won't have any lunch, and then they start eating, and they're starved around dinner time, and they have a bunch of calories between 6 and 10 o'clock at night. So it doesn't work for everyone. But if you quit at 5 in the evening, you know, you finish your dinner. What time do you go to sleep, by the way?
Oh, probably 10:30, 11 o'clock.
Uh-huh. So you're obviously eating less calories. I would continue with it. That's working for you. I think that's fine.
Well, I found that I ate because of boredom.
Of course. We eat for entertainment.
Absolutely. I ate because I was thirsty. I never even realized that.
Uh-huh. You mean you would go, when you were thirsty, you mean you'd have some water and what?
Now I just have water, and I'm quite satisfied.
Yeah. What would you have before? You mean you'd have something that was caloric?
I might grab a handful of nuts or make a sandwich or a bowl of cereal or whatever.
When was the last time you were really starving?
Oh, gosh. It would have been a very, very rare instance.
Mm-hmm.
I may have been in a backcountry canoe trip or something.
That's it. You got it.
Yeah.
That's it. You had to be away from modern conveniences. You're in a backcountry canoe trip. You then finally get to stop somewhere, and maybe you have some ramen that you cook on that stove fire, and it is the best tasting food you have ever had in the world. At least that's my memory. I think about when I hitchhiked when I was in medical school. My best buddy and I, Chuck, left Chicago and hitchhiked across Canada, all the way across Canada, made it to the West Coast, and I've had a backpacker's pressure cooker, and we would have ramen at night, and it was better than any gourmet food I've ever had in my life. And that was the last time I was starving. Other than that, and when I was in Nepal backpacking, I wasn't. So I mentioned that because we eat for entertainment, and you have cut that out. Keep it up.
All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for this fantastic program. It's the best on public radio.
Well, thank you.
Aren't you
thank
nice?
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
800-462-7413. Before the next call, Zorba, let's check in with your favorite nitpickers, the Grammar Police.
You know that You know, that music makes me smile every time.
Oh, you won't smile after.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, wait a minute. I'm sitting up straight.
Okay.
I've got the right posture. I've got both hands on the table. I don't have my elbows on the table. I am ready.
Here we go. The following email comes to us from a listener named Ray, who listens to the show in Winona, Minnesota. He writes, "Dear Zorba, much of my research career has been spent studying piscivorous species such as herring, gulls, and great blue herons. Therefore, a person whose diet is focused on fish is a piscivore." Doesn't sound good.
Piscivore.
That's the name.
Piscivore?
That's what he
it's
says.
It's not a pescarian.
No.
It's a piscivore.
Piscivore.
I'm not going to use that. I don't care how correct it is. I am not. If I call somebody a piscivore, I may just get in the face.
They'd probably punch you in the nose.
That's what I mean. You piscivore. I don't. That sounds insulting to me. I don't care if it's grammatically correct.
Hey, listeners.
I ain't going to use that word.
Listeners. Did you catch a mistake Zorba made? Or even if you're just fishing for attention, post your thoughts
to
Facebook.
That would sure get my attention.
Or send them along in an email,
too. Imagine I'm in a restaurant going, "I'm a piss of work. You have anything on this menu for me?" I can just imagine what the wait person would say. ZorbaPastor.org. Facebook, too. Just come to it. Actually, post some things on Facebook. Let us know what you're thinking.
800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, a listener with us from Lewiston, New York. Hi.
It's good to talk to you. I'm looking forward to this.
Oh, great. How can we help?
Well, I am I'm an old gee. I'm going to have a birthday this month, and I'm going to be 79 years old. As far as I know, I'm in pretty good health, but my doctor tells me I have osteoporosis. Tried to take Boniva, and it just, the acid, which I normally don't have a problem with, just was awful. So she's now recommending that I get a shot of Reclast, which is zoledronic acid. I looked it up on the computer. There's all kinds of side effects. I mean, about six pages of stuff that could happen, and I'm really having second thoughts about, do I want this Reclast shot or not?
Well, it turns out that treatment of osteoporosis, if you can treat it effectively, reduces the risk of fracture. You know, no one really cares about osteoporosis. What they care about is fractures, you know, broken bones and things of that nature. So let's talk about that. Have you had a break?
No.
Okay.
This week I took a little bit of a fall. Not a serious one. Just scraped my knee a little bit, but nothing.
Okay.
Absolutely
Do
nothing.
You exercise?
Not as much as I should. I walk, and I'm trying to get in the habit of going swimming.
Okay, 30 minutes of gravity-type exercise. Walking, from an osteoporosis point of view, is actually better than swimming. Swimming is good aerobically, but you're buoyant in the water, and if you want to keep your bones strong, walking is great. Walking is a great thing to do. Okay, the drugs. Reclast is a drug given intravenously, so it's a shot, but it's given intravenously, over, I don't remember if it's a one-hour period or so. It has side effects. It has flushing and a whole bunch of side effects. But it's a once-a-year drug, does not have the GI side effects. So you have to sit there and balance what are the side effects of this drug, it's really scary, against the benefits of the drug, which also, you know, osteoporosis can be really scary. And the way to do that is, how bad is your osteoporosis? If it's really bad osteoporosis, and once again, it's a breath, you know, how much calcium is really in your bones, I'd probably say, just do the Reclast and I'll take my chances. If it's just minimal osteoporosis, I might wait.
Okay, well, I certainly do appreciate what you've told me. That gives me an idea how to handle this.
Exactly. Thanks so much for your call. Really appreciate it.
We do. 800-462-7413. Before we head out, Zorba, let's tackle an email question from a listener named Dan. Hi, Zorba. Recently, you talked about the general inaccuracy of digital exams and PSA blood tests. I've been on a testosterone replacement treatment regimen for the last 6 months or so. I had a PSA and a digital exam done, both negative, before starting my T-shots, as my doctor told me, that testosterone can accelerate prostate cancer if I were to have it. Now my doctor wants to do them both again. Do you think both the digital and PSA are necessary? Are there other options? I'm very satisfied with the T treatments so far.
Well, the first question is, do you need the testosterone? I mean, there's a lot of placebo effect in the testosterone because this – well, first of all, any studies that we have, we don't have great studies, but the studies show the effect is marginal at best and tends to depreciate over time. So you have to question that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a risk. It does increase the risk of prostate cancer if you have it, and then you have to decide whether or not you want to do the test. Now, keep in mind the digital rectal examination misses a lot of prostate cancer, and so does the PSA test. 30 to 40% of all prostate cancer is not picked up from the PSA test. So the test and the digital rectal examination do not necessarily assure that you have it. But your doctor is playing the conservative route. And you might say to your doctor, look, I don't want to have it. I'm willing to take my risk. It's a small risk. It's there. It's small. I don't want to have the exam. Will you continue to do it? And the doctor might say, sure. Because the doctor might be playing the CYA exam. Test. You know what?
Cover your
back part. Since we cannot say the back part, buttock, swear word beginning with letter A, but it's cover your butt type of thing. And the doctor's saying, hey, don't sue me for malpractice. I'm going to do the PSA and the digital rectal examination. You can say, look, I want to get the testosterone. I don't want to do the test. And your doctor will either agree or not agree. I do not, if you're going to have testosterone, I think that's kind of an overreach. You might want to do a PSA test to begin. I think that's not a bad idea. I think that's probably a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no evidence that monitoring the PSA while on testosterone is actually going to keep you from getting more aggressive form of prostate cancer. So there can be a false assurance that a normal PSA means you're not going to get prostate cancer. You can continue on the testosterone. So in that case, it's a false negative because you then have assurance when, in fact, you shouldn't have assurance at all. So there's no one has recommended following PSAs to make sure that the testosterone is okay to use. So I think there's a problem with that.
Interesting. Have a question for Zorba? He's always happy to help. Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org, or don't forget to find us on Facebook.
And don't forget you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping that you'll join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
For more Zorba Pastor on Your Health, including episodes, recipes, and tips mentioned on the program, visit ZorbaPastor.org. This year, we're celebrating the show's 25th anniversary, and we want to hear from you. How has Zorba helped you out? What have you learned from the show over the years? Leave us a message at 800-462-7413.